I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and many great local sponsors like S&R Remodeling and our friends at the Axler Law Firm. Joining us now, State Representative Gordon Hinds. He is a Democrat from Oshkosh, but for the first time since he's come on the podcast, he is the minority leader in the State Assembly. Gordon, congratulations on your new position.
Hey, thanks, and happy to be on.
Let's start with the topic of what the Republicans are doing nationally with the tax bill, and I'm not going to call it tax reform, and how that's going to affect people in Wisconsin and how it fits in with what the Republicans have done in Wisconsin with their budget. Give me a roadmap of where how devastating you think this can be for people.
Well, I think it's probably going to be more devastating than things happen, you know, that have happened in Wisconsin over the last few years. You know, in Wisconsin, I mean, the one thing they both have in common is that, you know, tax policy is not driven by what the best outcome is or what might put more money in people's pockets or what might encourage consumer spending to stimulate the economy. It seems to be this same old trickle-down idea where we essentially will give massive tax cuts to the wealthiest individuals and corporations at the expense of either programs that benefit, you know, working-class people, or in the case of the federal level, shifting the tax burden increasingly to the working and middle-class people in the country. And states like Wisconsin, with some, you know, deductions, with programs that we've been used to for a while, are probably in the long run, you know, bigger losers. And of course, the fact that you've got Governor Walker and Speaker Voss beating the drums for this federal tax reform, I think, you know, there's no more mystery here. It's pretty clear what these guys believe and whose side they're on. And the bottom line is it's not the public.
You know, but the governor's base is suburban Milwaukee, the I call it the Ring of Fire, right? Outside Milwaukee County, the Ring of Fire. You know, there are people with a couple million-dollar homes. Their mortgage tax deduction, they're going to take a huge hit.
Well, I think that's what I saw is the way, you know, there's a standard deduction amount that, you know, the impact might not be as bad for someone with a $80,000 home, but someone who earns over $200,000 a year is going to see that increase. And of course, there's a lot of people who use some of the other deductions like the student loan interest or the medical device. You know, there are a number of things that depending on the individual and what their circumstance is, when it comes tax time, they're going to find like, wow, you know, there's a shift going on. And of course, because they're so desperate to get something through, the type of deliberation and consideration that should be going on and the type of education and, you know, explanation and input from the public just isn't happening.
You know, it's interesting. There's that old Mike Kinsley saying about in Washington, you know, letting the truth out is essentially, you know what I mean? Essentially saying something that's true is kind of the cardinal sin. You're not supposed, there are things you're not supposed to say publicly. And
right.
Stephen Moore, the conservative writer, who I think is with the Heritage Foundation now, he basically let the cat out of the bag that they were deliberately targeting states like New York, Illinois, Massachusetts, California, because they were blue states. Well, I don't know if the president knows this, but he's also targeting states that he won, if in fact that is their MO.
Right. And of course, those same states and the reason why you might have, even if our state is disproportionately impacted by some of these changes, the reason you have Republican leaders at the state level still supporting it is they will probably use this saying, well, because of these tax changes, we're going to have to continue to starve the beast and reduce our own tax burden to essentially, you know, they'll blame the federal government for forcing their hand to both cut our resources and therefore cut the programs that, you know, impact people. I mean, isn't it odd that Susan Collins said that she was assured there would be no cuts to Medicare, and then right after the Senate passed it, Speaker Ryan said, we will immediately begin the reduction of Medicare benefits.
Which has been his dream since he was at keg parties in college. I don't know, but
correct.
He must have gone to different keg parties than the keg parties I went to.
The other thing to say about this is as we've learned in Wisconsin, as crazy as it sounds, you should take them at their word. I mean, you're right. He has been talking about it. They're serious. And is just nuts as it sounds. Yes, they are going to sell off land in our national parks. Yes, they are going to get rid of these deductions, which millions of Americans use to be able to, afford whatever their individual circumstance is, whether it's high student loan debt or medical devices, just two that I've highlighted. They're serious.
Here is Iowa U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley.
I think not having the estate tax recognizes the people that are investing as opposed to those that are spending every darn penny they have, whether it's on booze or women or movies.
Huh. Man.
Tell that to a middle-class Wisconsin family.
I remember when I think it was David K. Johnston, the author and writer who, during the 2000 or 2004 election, went all across Iowa and was trying to find a single farmer who paid the estate tax, because that used to be the example that Republicans would use to justify the elimination of the estate tax, and they could not find one. They could not find a farmer who actually paid the estate tax. So I don't know if Chuck Grassley he's clearly not hearing from people in Iowa.
Here is Orrin Hatch, who was elected to the United States Senate when I was 15 and wearing braces.
Nobody believes more in the CHIP program than I. I invented it. I was the one who wrote it. The reason CHIP's having trouble is because we don't have any money anymore. I have a rough time wanting to spend billions and billions and trillions of dollars to help people who won't help themselves, won't lift a finger, and expect the federal government to do everything. And unfortunately, the liberal philosophy has created millions of people that way, who believe everything they are or ever hope to be depend upon the federal government rather than the opportunities that this great country grants them.
That's pretty remarkable.
It is. I mean, I hadn't heard that one. And it is, I mean, how insulated is someone like that? I mean, when is the last time a young guy like Orrin Hatch just went to, like, the grocery store or the YMCA or visited a Salt Lake City elementary school? It's as if he has no idea what the impact of some of the economic transformation that's happened in this country, that's put people in circumstances, that's put children in circumstances through no fault of their own. The lack of empathy for the American citizenry is striking.
He's acting like it's the House of Lords.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what he sounds like. I think it is because of what's driving the train. You know, I met with a Republican person the other day who sort of was beside himself because he was sort of a Republican businessman who's used to getting different policies that may not have always been great, but that were beneficial for them under what was considered sort of traditional Republicanism. And he was sort of saying it's impossible for us to even get good decisions that are seemingly pro-business when it really is the ideological train, the Americans for Prosperity or, the billionaires kind of pushing for a lot of these things that don't have, it's purely ideological.
Well, they, according to many reports, essentially just threatened these people that they needed to get this tax bill done or the money was going to stop. What do you make of our senior senator Ron Johnson's behavior during this whole process on tax "quote unquote" reform?
I mean, Ron Johnson has no credibility left. I've sat through his slideshow on at least three different occasions.
Oh, where God bless
he
you!
He shows me the deficits and the bar graphs, and he's right. I mean, we are spending more money than we're bringing in. And at some point, there's...
Could you move your phone just a little bit? You're breaking up just a little bit, Gordon.
Sorry. Sorry. We're spending more money than we're bringing in, and there's a day of reckoning coming in the future, and we can't do anything that is going to make the deficit worse. And so I knew that we had Ron Johnson against any kind of tax change that was going to make the deficit so much bigger. And he had spent 7 years talking about this. And sure enough, he completely changed his opinion on everything that he spent the last 7 years talking about.
Would it be fair to say at some point he's used the Congressional Budget Office as a source for some of his numbers when he said he was panicked? Remember, how many times has he said he was panicked about the deficit? Now he's scoffing at the Congressional Budget Office numbers.
Yeah, he also said he wasn't a politician, and he's behaving in the most consummate politician ways. I mean, he's a hypocrite. I mean, he couldn't turn down giving away millions of dollars. And of course, as we know, he was opposed to it. Originally, I thought he was going to be opposed to it because of the reasons he was concerned about the deficit. But it sounds like he was opposed to it because there wouldn't be benefits to small businesses such as his own.
You know, he's put an office in Dane County now, in Sun Prairie. He had ignored the second largest media market in the state, or second largest market in the state. What is your guess on whether that guy runs for another term, even though he's term limited himself?
Well, I mean, I just mentioned other pledges, promises, positions that he's had. I think nothing that he has said related to term limits holds any credibility. We'll see. We'll see what's left in 6 years of a lot of things, but I don't think that means anything given how many promises have been broken just in the last 2 weeks alone.
Let's talk about Scott Walker spending almost $7 million in advertising money to sell the state to workers, young workers. Your colleague from the west side of Milwaukee, Danny Reamer, has said, let me see if I can get the quote here. I believe he called him the uncool governor and said that Scott Walker has... here it is. Scott Walker is the anti-cool governor. He's deeply out of touch with what makes us tick. He called it ironic Walker, who killed the proposed Madison to Milwaukee train line, would be advertising to young people, advertising young people to Wisconsin to bring people here. Walker needs to embrace public transportation. Your thoughts on that?
I think Danny's on to something. Look, the best thing that Wisconsin can do to continue to be a desirable place that people want to live is continue to enhance in quality of life things that have made Wisconsin historically a great place to live and locate to. Good public schools, investment in quality infrastructure, increased funding for public transportation, which we know is going to be more important with both an aging population and because of the mismatch we see in some communities like Milwaukee, where you've got a higher percentage of unemployed people who have no way to get to the places where there are job opportunities, and enhanced recreational opportunities. I mean, these are the things that everybody has highlighted, and we have a labor shortage, and I think the governor is realizing that his policies are not helping get the kind of working age people that we need to locate here to fill jobs.
I think we have an image of what a young person who's mobile and moving around may look like that we want to attract to the state. But what about construction workers? You know, there are a lot of different types of workers that move around. We have blue collar workers that move around for good jobs. Was killing the prevailing wage, going after project labor agreements and doing right to work, was that going to attract new workers to Wisconsin that would earn a decent wage?
And absolutely not. And that's the other thing. I don't believe in completely trying to, shape policies to chase a certain idea of a person that we have that exists. And I guess that's why I was focusing on the broader quality of life issues that I think most families are looking for, whether it's the blue collar guy or the tech millennial that, we imagine. But clearly, the policies that have passed aren't going to create the same kind of economic opportunities. And when we're competing against other regions for employment, I mean, that's going to be a problem. I mean, I was talking to, again, the same business guy the other day who was highlighting the shortcomings of the prevailing wage repeal is you've got contractors out there who they're going to have less business because they're going to get undercut by two guys in a truck. And so let's say you lower their taxes. Well, if their overall revenue is down, you know, paying 0.5% higher taxes on much greater revenue is going to bring them more revenue than they would have if it was a tax cut on a lower, you know, percentage of revenue. And I mean, these guys are realizing that these policies are going to be not just bad for their workers, but it's going to cut them out of work opportunities, that they would have had otherwise.
Well, if low taxes were the only thing that would make a state prosperous, then, you know, I think Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, they've sort of missed the boat, right? Those aren't the most prosperous states in the country.
No.
All right, stand by. We'll talk more with Minority Leader, State Representative Gordon Hinds. Slysoffice.com.
Hi there. My name is Ishmael Ozan, and many of you know me as the Dane County District Attorney, but I am also a husband and a father of two young girls. Today, I am asking you to make the choice my wife and I made to not use physical punishment with our children. Many of us are not aware that over 16 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics urged doctors to recommend that parents not use physical punishment on their children. Today, over 100 years of research on children and families supports this recommendation. Look, well-meaning parents may use physical discipline intending to teach their children to make good choices, but we now know that physical discipline actually leads to more disobedience and aggressive behaviors in children. We all want what is best for our kids. Today, we now know what is best for kids is parenting based on respect, mutual understanding, and logic, rather than fear of physical pain. Please join me in learning more about positive parenting and creating a violence-free home.
Paid for by the Dane County District Attorney's Office with support from UW Health American Family Children's Hospital.
Take the scenic drive to the Guitar Oasis Cool in Jefferson County. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, jeffsguitar.com.
We're back with State Representative Gordon Hinds. He is the new minority leader for the Democrats in the Wisconsin legislature. One of the things that Governor Walker's pushing ahead for is this, and that is drug testing people that receive food share payments. Let me just play a clip of Walker here.
Authorized it at the state level, putting in a system that allows us to ensure that welfare recipients can pass a drug test. We're hopeful the new president, new administration, the Congress will afford us and other states the opportunity to do that. Not to be punitive, that's what some of my critics say. It's not to be punitive at all. In fact, I put millions of dollars 2 years ago in my last budget to provide rehabilitation for anyone who takes a test and fails, because my ultimate goal is to get them healthy. Why? Because every week, sometimes every day, I hear employers in my state say, I have so many job openings, just get me people who can do two things. One, who have basic employability skills. I'm not talking about large-scale skilled trades programs, although we do all that too. They just mean people with fundamental employability skills. Showing up for work, being there when the time you're supposed to be there. If you want time off, asking for it. You know, simple things like that. And then being able to pass a drug test. You know, one of my sons just was away for part of the last year in Raleigh working. He came back to Wisconsin. He's at a bank in digital. He had to do a drug test. So that's not uncommon in the private sector, certainly in areas like healthcare and transportation and construction where...
Isn't that the key, private sector? And by the way, I think there's too many companies that do drug tests, but isn't there something different about the government testing someone for drugs without probable cause than a private company taking applicants?
Yeah, I certainly think that is one issue of concern. But the reality is we have other examples of states doing this type of thing, and we know that it's expensive, it's ineffective, and that most people that are recipients of these, a smaller percentage of welfare recipients, are using drugs than the general population. And it's a way to, I think, be punitive, provide little value. And again, people that are concerned about wasteful government spending should look at programs like this. Governor may think he's got good politics on this one, but public policy and wasteful spending at the end of the day, given how ineffective these programs have demonstrated themselves to be, it falls short.
Give me an update on what you think is going on with Foxconn. There was a piece in the Wisconsin State Journal yesterday that's kind of got Eau Claire tangled up, this right-wing Federalist Society, Bradley-funded group, the Law and Liberty Project, going after the way Eau Claire has used TIF money, and it could affect Foxconn. Have you been following this?
I have, or I guess I read the same story, and I think there are a couple communities out there that have essentially used tax increment financing, not just for the development, redevelopment of a project, but to ultimately subsidize the project. And I think that's the issue that's in play related to Foxconn, and that some of the local incentives being done in southeastern Wisconsin, like the state incentives, are ultimately there to either reduce the liability or come in the form of paying the company directly for things, which this decision might have an impact on. I think we're seeing some growing pains at the local level. You know, so much of our discussion focused on the enabling legislation and the potential high cost to state taxpayers. But if you remember when Kenosha pulled out of the project, they ultimately realized that there was no way they were going to have the resources under the state legislation to be able to deal with the additional costs and burdens that they as local government units would take on in a project like this. And I think you're seeing some of those growing pains in Racine.
You must talk to your constituents on a pretty regular basis. What do they think of the Foxconn deal?
Mixed. You know, there are some businesses who are hoping for some opportunity, although the idea that we're going to develop a supply chain that is already established in China, I think is folly. But a lot of people are wondering in our area how we can have $3 billion for a foreign company to come here, but we don't have a fraction of that to assist some of our existing employers, Appleton Coated.
Which there was a little bit of good news on that yesterday. They're starting up again. But, yeah, I have Outagamie County Executive Tom Nelson on frequently, and he, along with the steelworkers, are working diligently to get these places back up and running. And, boy, that money that Walker's just going to spend on advertising to millennials, just a fraction of that could have helped them at Appleton Coated.
Right, and I think that's what you're hearing a lot of heartburn on, especially from places outstate, given, the challenges or the lack of access to capital for businesses to be able to, repurpose some of their work or make some more efficiencies or invest in some equipment, but obviously also from the startup community and from new businesses that usually end up creating the majority of new jobs, but who can't get off the ground. I mean, when we heard tech leaders in Madison saying, boy, long-term, this is a really inefficient, ineffective use of state tax dollars if your goal long-term is to grow a sustainable economy in Wisconsin.
Let me ask you about your criticism of the UW's Thompson Center. What's going on there? This is the sort of think tank center that's going at the University of Wisconsin, named after former Republican Governor Tommy G. Thompson.
Well, I think there's a couple different things going on there. I do think there are people that have been involved with the La Follette School, of which I'm a graduate at Madison, and some others who I understand for a number of years now have thought about working on this concept of a Thompson Center to highlight public leadership and some issue deliberation to kind of get back to the Wisconsin idea. It sounds like it's sort of been hijacked by the criticism of the UW system and from those like Speaker Voss who wanted this year an alternative viewpoint and more with more conservative speakers and other things. And so it kind of got inserted in the budget under a very different idea than I think some of the faculty and administration at Madison originally had intended.
Just going to say, Speaker Voss doesn't think there's alternative viewpoints. Has he ever taken a trip to Granger Hall?
That's a good question. I mean, when I was in grad school, I went to see Alan Keyes. So, I remember plenty of balance in terms of what speakers were coming.
Alan Keyes is a big Roy Moore supporter, by the way.
I didn't say my participation in attendance was an endorsement.
Okay, so bottom line, you think this center is being kind of used as a Trojan horse?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. Like I said, there seems to be competing visions for what it's going to be. I've met with Ryan Owens, the head of the center. I've expressed my concerns. I participated in the first forum, and one of the things I said is, look, if the Bradley Foundation is responsible for, you know, a lot of the private funding involved, you know, and that's not transparent, the credibility of the Thompson Center is going to be nothing. It's going to be a joke. I mean, I'm expressing as much to Governor Thompson. This can be a value-added contribution. I don't know if it was the best idea to commit $3 million to this new, potentially redundant project when we've had more than $800 million of cuts to the UW system the last few years. But it remains to be seen. So, I mean, I didn't support it. I don't know that it was necessary. I think it could play a positive role, but I really question the vehicle that it might be for those who have a different agenda, you know, for what the UW system is going to be. And we're seeing these kind of privately funded pushes to infiltrate higher education across the country from groups like the Bradley Foundation. And I think that should be the red flag that people use to ask questions and to highlight the need for accountability.
Yeah, the Bradley Foundation is a big red flag. Before you go, let me ask you about recruitment of candidates for 2018. We don't know what's going to happen in the redistricting case. There certainly is a lot of people that are very motivated right now to get involved in politics, a lot of women around the country running. How is your recruitment effort going to get people involved in the process?
Well, we feel it's going, you know, very well. We're getting a lot more people contacting us directly in seats that have historically been, you know, not as competitive. And so we're seeing people that think that that's where we could see some big swings, or they want to go out there anyway to hold these people accountable. And obviously in the seats where we feel we can be competitive, like you mentioned, we're seeing more women getting involved in running for office. We've got a great Emerge program in Wisconsin, where they've been training, you know, women to get more involved in politics. And I think we're seeing every day that that would be of a benefit. And I think I wouldn't be surprised to see some retirements on the other side. We're starting to see literal cracks in the infrastructure in our state. I think people have a lot of questions about Governor Walker in the last 8 years. And, you know, we're going to put forward an agenda that we think can resonate with people.
State Representative Gordon Hinds, the new minority leader in the Wisconsin State Assembly for the Democrats. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
Hey, thanks for having me. Anytime.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.